Think for yourself. While it's still legal, there's microchips in your vaccine. Birds aren't real. Maybe you've had an uncle, a sister, a parent start talking like this and red flags went straight up. Conspiratorial thinking has spread through the megaphone of the internet and Australians aren't immune. These theories take on a unique flavour here in Australia. But what is it about our society in particular which lets these beliefs take root? To help answer this question, I'm joined by Ariel Bogle. She's the co-author of Conspiracy Nation, Exposing the Dangerous World of Australian Conspiracy Theories. Ariel, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Tegan. Good to be here.
Was there a particular conspiracy theory that got you thinking about writing this book?
Well, both my co-author, Cam Wilson, and I had kind of been in this mix during the pandemic. We'd been covering kind of the false claims that were circulating about the virus. We had been covering the anti-lockdown movement that sprung up in that era, looking at the anti-vaccine movement as well. And it was early 2023, we were sort of reflecting on that time. And I think what really struck me was that we often think of Australia as just kind of a net importer of conspiracy theories, just receiving all these claims from the United States by and large. But we thought there was something unique happening here too, something that hadn't really been examined about what exactly took off here in Australia, which conspiracy theories are kind of adapt to our home ground, which ones are we creating for ourselves, and what kind of stories are we telling about the lives of people in this country.
Tell me about some of the Aussie conspiracy theories you looked into.
Well, we looked into Port Arthur, of course, the mass shooting, the tragic mass shooting back in 1996. We think that's kind of a central text, I guess, of the Australian conspiracy theory culture, because it really took off just as the internet was entering the homes of Australians. Mm. So, you know, it happened in 1996 and people on the ground, journalists, others who were there, didn't really start to hear these fake claims about what had happened that day spread until the late 90s and the early 2000s, when people suddenly had access to the internet in their home. And you can kind of trace that through YouTube comment sections. You know, things were traveling through old GeoCity type blogs. It started to spread from there. And now in our experience, when we're wading into these subcultures, both in real life at protests and rallies and things, but also on the internet, of course, we see these fake claims about Port Arthur as kind of a central thread in that culture.
I mean, conspiracy theories aren't new, but talk to me about what it is about the nature of the internet that's really supercharged them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, people do make the claim that the internet has made more people believe in conspiracy theories, and we question that. I mean, I also question the sort of term believe. What does it really mean when people say they believe in a conspiracy theory? Because if we're honest with ourselves, like, we all dabble in these ideas. They can be kind of fun, like the claim that, you know, Harold Holt was picked up by a Soviet submarine and spirited away, or, you know, that Farlap was killed by American gangsters. These aren't stories that, you know, raise red flags immediately. They're just kind of fun things to dabble with. And we see this on the internet all the time. You know, these are kind of fairy tales we can sort of participate in with each other as some form of entertainment. But there is a spectrum here. I think when stories about, you know, evildoers plotting against the common good, you know, despite all evidence to the contrary, start to circulate, they are fulfilling some sort of need for people, whether it is putting a simple story around a really complicated situation, which is what we saw during the pandemic, or in the worst instances, I think too, we need to acknowledge that they can just be simply cover for our worst instincts, whether it be racism, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, of course. So this all permeates on the internet just like it does in real life. But I think what the internet does is just make it easier for people who believe in these things, or, you know, are looking for these kinds of stories, to find each other, and they can kind of self-seal in these ideological ecosystems because the internet allows them to communicate so much more easily than things did in the past.
I kind of rattled off a list of conspiracy theories at the beginning there, and almost flippantly, and I wonder whether actually that is the right tone to take with this sort of conversation, because if feeling disenfranchised is a predictor of people being drawn to ideas like this, does kind of making fun of them or being flippant about them maybe make people feel even more alienated?
It's a good question. question. And I think it's definitely something we discussed a lot in deciding what approach to take with the book. And we definitely approach people that we talk to who believe in these ideas, who are struggling with things in their lives and have turned to these ideas in a moment of crisis. We hope we treated them with empathy and trying to understand what purpose these ideas serve for them. But of course, we do want to take a more critical eye when people are exploiting these ideas. So whether that be to make money off fake health claims or using these for political purposes, because as we trace in the book too, these conspiratorial tropes, here are the good guys and here are the evil bad guys. Like, it's such a simple framework that makes it a really useful one for politics. And unfortunately, we have seen kind of conspiratorial frameworks turn up in Australian Parliament too. So, you know, there's a lot of people that want to traffic in these ideas for their own power as well.
You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Ariel Bogle, who is the co-author of Conspiracy Nation, all about Australian-grown conspiracy theories. Greg says, a friend of mine recently became unemployed. Unfortunately, to fill in time, he started Googling and got into crop circles, chemtrails, the big government controlling us conspiracies. Greg says, at least now he's busy with an online course and so has less time to, in inverted commas, research these things. Ariel, as part of your research for the story, you spoke with people who had been involved in conspiracy theories and had let go of them. What did they tell you?
Well, we did want to look at like how to push back against these ideas and talk to people that might have like been in one side and come out the other. And certainly there was like no simple 1-2-3 step plan. So unfortunately, I don't have that to offer your listeners. But I think it's really when... Well, I suppose I'll take one example. I spoke to a psychologist who had some clients during the pandemic started to share with him ideas like QAnon. People might be familiar. This is this, you know, extremely significant conspiracy theory in the United States that Donald Trump was fighting a elite pedophile cabal and would sweep it all away, you know, with elements of, you know, arresting Hillary Clinton and all of Hollywood. And, you know, it just got bigger and bigger. And also some anti-vaccine sentiment that they were sharing with him. And he really did struggle with how to approach that with his clients, whether they could still do the work of therapy together. And he decided, you know, he wasn't going to let these clients go because when he really got down to it, he wanted to try and understand why they had turned to these ideas, what needs they were serving. And in one instance, he had a client who had been, you know, had a workplace injury, was struggling to find help and sort of deal with the end of a potential career that he had dreamed about for a long time. And maybe these ideas had helped, or he'd turned to these ideas in that moment of crisis. But when he was able to get the help that he needed, these ideas were less pertinent for him. He didn't need them as much and started to turn away from them. And that's what other researchers in this space have told me. Matt Marks, an Australian academic who studies these ideas as well, said, you know, there's not like really a cult dusting approach you can take, but often when the material circumstances change that had led people to these ideas, that can help resolve. So, you know, maybe it is really at the biggest level, looking at equity in Australia, access to resources, access to healthcare. These are the types of things we should be talking about when trying to ensure that people don't spin off down the rabbit hole.
Were there any particular kind of brand of conspiracy theory that really stood out to you as being harmful beyond just sort of people believing something different to the people around them?
Well, I took a good look at pseudo-law in the book, and I think people might be more familiar with the term sovereign citizen. You might have seen these clips circulating on the internet of people having these bizarre confrontations with police, you know, claiming that they're travelling, not driving when they've been pulled over at a traffic stop, making kind of legal-ish claims, but clearly incorrect claims. So, you know, a lot of people, again, think that's a completely American thing that's been imported here, but Australia has actually a really long history of its own forms of pseudo-law all through, like, the colonial legal system and up until the current day. And I have looked at the impact this is having on the family court in particular. There is, like, a quite an unfortunate trend of these ideas being used in the family court, really disrupting procedures, slowing down the court system, and of course for families having a really detrimental effect when, say, one partner is trying to use these claims in court, the other is struggling with how to deal with that. It just creates a whole lot of pain. And I think talking to people that have tried to use these ideas in court, you know, the stories are really sad about why they've turned to this, but it, again, just has so much a ripple effect through the entire legal system and, of course, doesn't end well because at the end of the day, these are not legitimate legal arguments.
Ariel, thanks so much for joining me. Ariel Bogle is the co-author of Conspiracy Nation, exposing the dangerous world of Australian conspiracy theories.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.